good to have you with us on The Takeaway today. I'm Todd Zwillick. War photography has a long tradition in journalism. It's designed to bring readers close to conflict, to make us confront the awful realities of combat so that we can hold leaders accountable. And to that end, war photos often tend toward grim, desperate images of the destruction and the personal toll of grief and loss. Photographs depicting victims. Well, journalist Anastasia Taylor-Lind traveled to the border of Bangladesh and Myanmar to photograph Rohingya refugees for Human Rights Watch, and she saw those kinds of images in real life, suffering unlike anything she'd seen in her 15-year career, she says. But instead of taking war photos as we've come to know them, Taylor-Lind took a new approach to photographing the victims.
One of the limitations or the failings of photojournalism is that we so often are pushed to represent people at their most vulnerable and their most distressed. And of course, as you imagine, more than 500,000 people with nothing, living in very desperate conditions, desperate for shelter, food, for the basic necessities of life. The problem with photographing people in that way is that we start to understand that they're somehow different from us. And it was with this in mind, with those tropes of photojournalism in mind, that I decided instead of approaching this in a reportage way, I would set up a makeshift portrait studio. And I would try to photograph the people I met in the same way that I would photograph my mother or my friends or somebody who asked me to make a portrait of them in London.
So what rises to the surface for you as the photographer, just placing a subject, in this case, a victim of a massacre or an expulsion or a torture, just in relief against a dark background?
In terms of telling these stories, we're dealing with a matter of scale. So many Rohingya have been forcibly pushed out of their homes, their villages, burnt to the ground behind them, and now living in these sprawling refugee camps inside of Bangladesh. So we're talking about very large numbers. But again, the essence of portrait photography is that you don't represent people as statistics. You're able to take one person and one face and one story and to look at them. And the experience as well of being a photographer, of sitting with someone in silence, having removed the clutter of the refugee camp and the swarms of people around us, and just being able to be with one person and to be with them. That's not to say that traditional photojournalists represents this situation in a way that's untrue. Of course, those things are true. People were fighting for food and building makeshift shelters, and the aid distribution was sometimes happening, and whole families were wading through flooded paddy fields to reach the refugee camps. But it's also true that when people arrived, maybe these portraits are a proof of life.
Being seen is a proof of survival, in a sense.
It struck me so much how willing everybody was to be photographed, how they allowed me to make their picture. And I wonder if, in some senses, that is connected with this idea that they survived when often their entire families did not.
Well, I find us returning to the place of empathy here, Anastasia. It's a theme that comes up so often when I talk to journalists or other people who've borne witness in the way that you have. It's very difficult, if not impossible, for listeners of a public radio show or readers of a magazine to gain empathy for victims when they see pictures of war, hear stories of war on the radio. But I think you've gotten much, much closer to a place of empathy one-on-one with your photographs.
I wonder if the solution in part lies in representing others in the way that we would expect to represent ourselves. I am defined now by my gender, my occupation, my relationships to my family members. I would be introduced as a photographer, somebody from England, Daniel's sister. But when something like this happens in your community or your country, suddenly all of those identities are stripped away by us, journalists. The people that we tell stories about become statistics, collateral damage, refugees, massacre survivors. They provide eyewitness testimonies, sound bites. There's something very dehumanizing in this process. And in terms of the visual representation of conflict, we usually photograph people at war in a very different way than we would our own communities at peace. So perhaps some of the solution lies in fighting this, the system of photojournalism and journalism, but also our own compulsion to represent people as the other.
You've used this method in other conflicts as well. I read that you went to Ukraine on assignment, and I've seen your photographs of Ukrainians, young and old, men and women, soldiers, protesters, in front of a black screen there as well.
I should say that my background is as a traditional reportage photojournalist. And the reasons that I have slipped away from that genre in some instances is usually because of the presence of so many of my colleagues. That was the case in Maidan Square in 2014 during the revolution. And that was also the case covering the Rohingya crisis last September. I wasn't the only journalist who was there. Of course, if I was, it would be my responsibility to represent everything that I saw. But these photographs exist in the context of my colleagues' work. We all know what a line of women wearing shalwar kameezes, carrying plastic bags full of belonging through rice paddies look like. And I'm not sure it serves the story to keep making those photographs. In the same instance in Ukraine, I was just trying to think about what I could add to the collective visual documentation of what was happening there. And since the digital revolution and the advent of social media and the prevalence of so many smartphones and tablets in the places where these historic events are taking place, it doesn't really make sense anymore to behave like the only photojournalist in a specific area whose job it is to represent a whole situation.
Many of your subjects in these photos, Anastasia, have evidence of injuries. They're in bandages. Some of them hide their faces in anguish or show wounds of conflict or torture. Others simply look back at you or into the distance. There's a real array of reactions that you've got from the people you photographed.
The question I ask myself is, what does war look like? What does intent, organized mass violence look like? I mean, it's my job to visualize that. But in portraiture, it's my hope that I may recognize just for a moment the experience on somebody's face that shows what they've been through in the smallest way. Of course, a photograph can never replace experience. My photographs are not as raw and rich and visceral as the experience of sitting there myself as an individual and meeting someone who had experienced this extreme and outrageous trauma so recently. But at the same time, there's a vast chasm between the experience for me of sitting there and meeting someone and having actually experienced it yourself. And that's a challenge for all of us in journalism, to try in some way to bridge these small chasms between lived experience and my own experience of reporting and then showing my photographs or speaking about that to somebody else.
Anastasia Taylor-Lind, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Todd.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.